At first glance, it might seem a little difficult to see how our first reading from Proverbs and our gospel today go together. Proverbs describes the qualities of a worthy wife. And then in the gospel, Jesus tells the parable of the three servants and the talents. But there is an important line there in Proverbs that helps us to bridge the gap. Proverbs says, "Her husband, entrusting his heart to her, has an unfailing prize." Entrusting his heart to her. When a husband sees the worth of his wife, he entrusts his heart to her, delivers his heart into her hands, loves her. In the gospel, a man entrusts his possessions to his servants. Now, I'm not saying that a wife is a servant to her husband. Don't hear that, please. And neither are the readings. Although we could say that the husband and wife are both servants to each other. But we are saying that a husband is called to entrust his love to his wife just as Christ does in the gospel. In the gospel, this man is Jesus himself. And Jesus knows his servants intimately, which is why he entrusts each servant uniquely. The gospel says, each according to his ability. The Greek word there is dynamis, to each according to his dynamite, his power. The Latin word is virtutem, to each according to the power of his or her virtue. Virtue is power. In this parable, and always with Jesus, there's no comparison. He deals with each person uniquely. And we'll see that a little more clearly at the end of the parable. This man, later called the master, is setting out. He's going out for a long time. He's gone for a long time. Just like after his resurrection and ascension, Jesus is gone, until he comes for us either individually or for at the end of time for all of us together. This man calls his own servants, calls them to himself, and he hands over to them everything that he has. Everything. Look at the trust the master places in his servants. And he's not micromanaging from a distance. This doesn't say anything about him writing letters or phone calls or faxes or emails or dropping in once in a while. But the servants do have all kinds of help and resources at their disposal. Sometimes, you know, we lament that Jesus isn't here telling us what to do every day. But he trusts us. And he knows that for us to grow, we need to experience his trust as real. And that's true in every relationship. We can't suffocate or control the other. If I want you to love me, I have to trust you. It's so important for us to come to believe that Jesus trusts us. Do you trust that he knows you better than yourself, and that what he gives you is perfectly suited for you? The first two servants imitate the master. They go out as well, working and gaining. The third servant also goes off, and he works just as hard as the first two, maybe harder, because he goes and he digs and he hides. What these three do tells a very different story of how they trust the master. After a lifetime of enjoying the master's trust, he returns to settle accounts. Sounds very businesslike, very computational. sit down at your ticker tape and let's count it all out. But it's actually so much more. The servants come forward one at a time. And the response of the master to the first two is exactly the same. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. Again, Jesus doesn't compare the servants. He deals with each one uniquely, according to his or her own abilities, powers, virtues. But he does demand an accounting. And notice that the reward is twofold. First, we're given more work. The saints in heaven continue to work for our good here on earth. They intercede for us. And they provide for us in every way that they can. The second reward is the invitation to enter into the joy of the master. And here we come to understand that the goal of this master had nothing to do with computation or accounts, had nothing to do with getting his servants to make money for him, but rather to transform them from earthly servants to divine sons and daughters who possess the very joy of the Lord himself. And that's why they're given more to do. Because part of the joy of God is to bring more and more of his servants into his family as sons and daughters. Now let's look at that third servant. He comes forward like all the others, but his attitude to the master is completely different. Master, I knew. From the beginning, he knew that the master wasn't trustworthy. And despite a lifetime of trust from the master, that hasn't changed. I knew you were a demanding person. And so out of fear, I buried what you gave me. Here it's back. You know, first, he's still very much a servant and not a son. But second, we get the impression that he can't wait to get rid of the master's gift to him, flinging it back like a hot potato. I don't want your gift. I don't want your grace. I don't want to change. I don't want to grow. I'm afraid to trust, to love, to hope. And we come to understand that the hole that he dug for the talent was really a hole that he dug for himself, which is exactly what the master says to him. Put this useless servant into the darkness outside. Put him into the hole that he's dug for himself, where he wants to stay forever, unchanged. When the master calls him lazy, it's a laziness that's born out of fear. I can't trust this trust that you've put in me. I think you're just trying to trick me, trap me, and I really want to be rid of you as quickly as possible. For his part, the master was willing to take anything, any growth, any movement, any response, just put it in a bank to get some interest. Let others do the work for you. Christ desires to redeem anything that we give him, no matter how small. But when we value ourselves so pitifully, before him who values us worth the price of his own suffering and death, he weeps at our wickedness, at our fearful laziness. But he also delivers us to the choice that we made for ourselves. The grace that he's given to you and to me is unique for each one of us. We can look to how others are using their gifts, but not to compare. Rather, to be inspired in the use of our own. The church in heaven and purgatory and here on earth calls us to trust in the trust that the Master gives to each one of us. And then to imitate that Master. Husbands, entrust your hearts to your wives. Wives, believe you're worth that trust. And let trust lead to respect. All of us are called to journey from servile fear to trust in the Master, and so to be joyfully transformed into divine sons and daughters. Here's the homework for the week. Think about, pray about, write about your image of God. What's the image of God that you have? Practically speaking. Is it full of fear or suspicion or indifference or hard-heartedness? Pray for the grace to trust in the trust God has given to you.